Welcome to MyPersonalFootballCoach.com's Soccer Player Development Podcast. Discover all the secrets, hints, and tips about soccer player development and soccer coaching from some of the leading figures in world soccer. Here's your host, Saul Isaacson-Hurst.
What's happening, guys? Welcome back to another show. This week we've got a top desk guest. It's Paul Holder. Paul's a bit of a legend in the game. Worked for the FA for many years, worked in first team football, worked in academy football. First came across Paul when I was doing what used to be called the youth coach's license, which changed into the youth modules many years ago. He's life and soul, very funny character, absolutely top drawer. But first and foremost, a top coach, and lucky to team coach with him when we were both doing some stuff for Crawley last year. And like a top coach educator. So really excited that I finally got him to come on the show. And just want to quick say, if you're watching on YouTube, you might see my San Diego FC jumper. Thanks for the Right to Dream project for sending me this. Right to Dream project, if you don't know, a top organisation, started with academies in Africa, now owns FC Nordsjælland in Denmark, got a new academy in Egypt, and they've just opened an MLS club with an academy in San Diego as well. So I'm really excited to see that project, how that continues. But without further ado, let's get into the show. Paul Holder, welcome to the show.
Hello, how are you?
Very well, mate. How are you doing?
All right, hanging on.
Yeah, the same. The first question is always the same for everybody. Can you give us a brief outline of your playing and coaching journey up to this point?
Well, I played mainly non-league. I had chances to go further than that, but I didn't really. I'm not sure I had the mental capacity to do the routines of in the professional game, and it didn't suit me. So I was teaching and coaching and playing at the same time and earning good money, and that suited me. In terms of coaching, I started as a PE teacher, actually, and always wanted to coach football. And luckily got a place at Crystal Palace working in couple of their centres, one in Crowthorne in way down in Berkshire, and then another one at Enfield, and that was part time, still teaching at the same time, then went full time, then went to the FA after about 7 years at Palace to do a regional job, coach development job, and then came out of that, went to Brighton as head of coaching for 5 or 6 years, and now back at the FA in the professional game team, looking at coach and player development.
Lovely. So tell us about that first role then in Palace. How does that go? What was your main roles there? And tell us about the main sort of things you remember about.
Palace had two centres for the young kids. One at in Crowthorne, where the kids used to train during the week, and then come up to Palace at weekends, and that was a good catchment, and it was a development centre really, but it was linked to the academy. It was directly linked to the academies, and then they opened one in Enfield, which was a hotbed for football, and trying to get kids from outside South London, if you like, and worked a treat. Basically lots of game practices, hardly any drills, because John Cartwright at the time, who was in charge of it all, of the academy at the time, wanted games players. So we did a lot of game-related practices pretty much all the time. In fact, I think we were banned from doing drills.
Oh, yeah, wow. So it's ironic.
Quite interesting.
So you spent 7 years there at Palace?
Yeah, about around 7 years, yeah. And that was in times of administration. But we've got some good players. You know, in times when resources are just, and luck is stacked against you, but you still come through. I mean, the catchment of Palace is second to none. I mean, they just walk off the street, you know, like.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Like, it's interesting they're coming up to North London for players, and they've probably got the best catchment area in London down there.
I think we extending. We had staff that came from North London, and there was an opportunity to pull some players down from Enfield, but the competition from Spurs and Arsenal was probably irresistible. So the centre sort of didn't have longevity in it. It's a shame for the one out at Reading, which was Crowthorne, had really good because Bracknell was pretty much where we drew players from. And that was quite, it got some good kids out of there, to be honest, good players. And they used to come up to London on a Saturday and join in with the London boys. And yeah, it worked.
Well, what other stuff, what other roles did you have then at Palace during that time?
Well, then I became full time and then was pretty much assistant academy director. And in those days, you pretty much run the schoolboy program and tap into the 17s and 18s. And as you can imagine, like we had sort of a continual stream of players going through or going off to other clubs. It was a really productive period, I think. For us.
And what was it like there? I mean, you assume, you know, you get a lot of, like, you know, South London boys from tough areas, you know, the inner city, you know, street players. Was there, I mean, you know, you normally associate that sort of catchment area with clubs like Palace. Did you see that? What were the sort of traits of these players? You know, they've, you know, thought of as these, like, you know, technically great 1v1 players. And also, was there any challenges in terms of, you know, relating to them and, you know, background and stuff?
I think the background, South London is that area is pretty famous for generating Premier League players. I think it's got a very high return, but it's not just the environment. You know, we had players that went to private school. We had players that were not necessarily, you know, the impression is that Palace have got dribblers and wild and windy players that are just play off the cuff and all that. Well, we had some really reliable, good footballers, you know, like if you took someone like Ben Watson that went on to play in the Premier League for Watford and then in Wigan, you know, he's a fantastic passer of the ball. He wasn't a dribbler and an electric pace that goes at defenders. So we had a good variety Marcus Bettinelli, who's obviously the goalkeeper, you know, so we had a variety of players, which was, I think it's strength. I think the impression was that, you know, they're loaded with these wide players that can go past players, but they had more than that. You know, the whole football population was diverse in many respects.
And so tell us about then, you know, what was the coaching methodology of the time? So you're assistant academy director, I assume you're quite have a lot of responsibility in terms of what the coaches are delivering. Can you give us a taste of what the syllabus was at the time, or what sort of sessions were going on at the time?
Well, at the time John Cartwright was in charge of that, and then a lad called Derek Broadley took over once John left. But initially, we kept the spirit of that program going, which was like game-related practices where tight areas, lots of high challenges, and very little drill-like activities, very directional, mostly opposed, lots of goals, lots of saving goals and scoring goals, lots of competition, and with that comes conflict and managing conflict. And actually it fell right into the lap of the South London lads and the London lads. You know, it can be a feisty environment, but it's also very respectful. So the programme was based around the games, game-related practices mainly. I think if I went back during that period, I'd probably spend a bit more time on more individual stuff, more 2v2s and 3v3s. More looking at more about more dedicated practice to individuals. If we added that to that, I think we would have been unstoppable, to be honest. We're fairly unstoppable at the time anyway.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about obviously the game-based stuff. The first time we met, I came across, was when I was in Kiel. We went to Kiel on those legendary FA courses, you and and Mr. John Allpress, the double act, you know, double coaching and comedy act that you guys were, which was really great. But I mean, you already at that time, you were already pushing the games, you know, the game based stuff, the new stuff which was coming through from the youth module. What's your thoughts? Obviously, we've worked and we've coached together. We coached together. We did a bit of crawling. I've seen you. Yeah. You've seen what I do. What are your thoughts then in that, in terms of, you know, the constraint stuff, the unopposed against the opposed debate and those sorts of things? What's your thoughts now? And was it then? And has it changed or what?
I think if we sort of think about, like, I've got a big thing now about tactics and about how it's a misunderstanding, you know, like the tactic. If you asked anyone about tactics, they're pretty much going to say team formations and how Manchester City play against Chelsea and blah, blah, blah. But I'm looking at more about the individual tactics, how players get the upper hand over the immediate opposition and how they don't allow the immediate opposition to get an upper hand over them. So there's tactics at an individual level. And that's the sort of work that you do, gives them this technical platform to be really tactical at an individual level. So what about the lad who, or Lasso, whoever it is the player that can just push the ball past someone and run past them because they can. And that's the tactic they employ. I think we could do much, much more work on what are my capabilities? What am I good at? How am I going to negate or sort of block my immediate opponent's capabilities, if you see what I mean? So I think we'll work, you know, if you think of things like, and I know the work you do, and it's about sort of like you and the ball and the space around you. I think we can do much more with that. And in 2v2s and 3v3s, you see, I think there's a thing about, if we talk about team, you know, you talk about teams, you go, oh, yeah, 11v11 or 9v9. You said, well, if there's two of you, that's a team. You can do team tactics. You can do individual tactics in 3v3s. And I think the more tactical, linked with the technical, obviously, the more more competent we can get the kids technically, then they can think more tactically at an individual level. And then pairs and then in threes. And I think that's a way forward, is to reframe tactics.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, definitely with the individual tactics. I mean, that's a lot of, you know, my work's based around the individual tactics, particularly the 1v1 and that, how to that looks in the game. But then I suppose that's the key, isn't it? Is then, you know, for coaches, how do they do that? Because what I think, you know, I'm doing a session, I've always said, you know, the vast majority of it will be, you know, those condition games, like I love you, like those, I love, like you, like the small sided, real small, you know, 2v3, 3v4s. But there is also that time for players on the ball individually to learn about the ball, and even number twos, like how does it respond to my foot and your foot, and those sorts of things, developing those, you know, decision making qualities with the ball. And I think that's where there's somehow it's been missed out, you know, of all that great work about doing stuff in games. Almost like we seem to have gone too far one way, where it's like anything in life, right? There's no balance. It's gone binary opposites. We've gone, right, we're probably doing too much of that. We're maybe doing none of it and going too far the other way. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think we it's like a pendulum. We keep swinging from one end to the other, you know, like, and there was a period of this. This game, the game is the teacher. And what that did was actually coaches tend to put a game on and then just leave it and do nothing. Mm. You know, the kids have to be taught and helped to understand what, you know, like time, space and numbers. And, you know, if you play simple games like, I'm not being funny, but you put a goal at each end and you play 3v3 and you put a zone at each end and say, look, before you score, you've got to get into this zone. You'll get all sorts happening, all sorts of combinations going on, how they interact with each other, how they use time, space and stuff. So I think we can go to simplicity, real simple practices with simple objectives, and then help them become masters at that. So if you look at 3v3, for example, I mean, I watch coaching sessions where people put on 3v3s in a direction. I get that. and then they treat it as a sort of physical exercise. But my point is, are they brilliant? Can they get brilliant at playing 3v3? Because all those skills that they can get at 3v3, if you do them often enough, you can dump them into the 11v11 if that's what you play. And I don't think we do these practices long enough, often enough, and with enough coaching to coach and help them with some of the moves. Wall pass, for example, is fundamental to being able to get past people. That triggers other movements. So I think we can do much better in terms of coaching in these small-sided practices. And therefore, the coaches have a lens on what the player is actually doing at an individual level and working with somebody else. Is connecting with more than one player, you know, connecting with your skills and then connecting with your teammates. I think, yeah, it, you know, in a long-winded way, I agree with what you're saying. We need to give them the basics, but, you know, we've got to make them do basics at an advanced level, not advanced skills at a basic level, you know?
Yeah, and it's like having a skill-based program. You know, where you're saying actually the skills are the game, they're the most, you know, that's the key to developing. They're actually going to improve your decision-making, you know, if you want to talk about decision-making. It's almost like we've gone low. No, we don't want a skills-based, we've gone to decision-based. And a lot of people are, well, no, it's all about decisions, where actually then it's nothing about the skills, which just seem to be a really weird sort of, you know, space to be in.
It's weird because, and it's a simple thing, kids who are players that are not competent with the ball will look down at the ball more often than not and miss the moves and miss opportunities, so on and so on. What I'm trying to get at is the more competent you are with the ball, it makes the tactical possible.
Exactly.
If you see what I mean. So if you want kids to be better decision makers, then the ball cannot be a problem. Now, I do think that we play on too tight areas sometimes, which means that the kids don't have time when they need it to breathe and move and execute their techniques. I think sometimes we're playing on very tight areas where everything is reactionary. There's a place for tight areas, but there's also a place for bigger areas where you can, there's a bit more running, there's a bit more movement, there's a bit more sort of like if you get beaten in a 1v1 in a big area, then you're beaten. In a tight area, if your mate is just next door to you, so if you're beaten, someone else is there, right? There's a lot to mixing up the area sizes. Sometimes it's tight, sometimes it's bigger. I don't think we do that very well.
Yeah, I agree. I think I forget the Diggers, who used to be with the FA, now went to Liverpool, now has gone to Leeds, had academy manager. I forget his name, because I was known his nickname, Diggers. Martin Diggle, that's it. Yeah. So Martin Diggle, forgive me, Martin, if you're listening, but he had a great point about it. He was talking about, you know, he said he banned the use of small goals, I think, at Liverpool. Mm-hmm. He was talking about even at England, where he said players weren't running beyond enough anymore. Strikers weren't getting opportunities to get beyond, you know, because everything had gone such tight spaces and in boxes. Like you say, those forward players, those Michael Owens of days ago used to just, you know, run on the shoulder and doing that. It's interesting, isn't it? I think there is a tendency to go to one or the other, isn't it? I remember from my experience at Tottenham, we were always tight areas. And when I went to Chelsea, it was always big areas, and took me a while to adjust and understand actually the benefit of both, like you say, having that balance. But I think there is times, I think as coaches, we do sort of almost compartmentalise ourselves or go one way, don't we, a lot of the time?
Well, if you think like players like, if you play in tight areas and you want players to be able to play into space and move onto the ball rather than have it at their feet all the time, then the only space is in the air. Whereas if bigger areas, you can learn to pass between people and you can learn to run between people. And the spaces, there are spaces either side of defenders. You know, like, and the smaller the area, that's those spaces are obviously reduced. And so we tend to get a lot of passing into feet. And I think there's also our physical capabilities. You know, we need players to be able to have to chase and run. Sometimes when you're in a 1v1 on a big pit, you know, on a Saturday or Sunday, or a 2v2, it could be in a really big area. You're going to have to cover ground, you know, and I think there's a physical element that we need to sort of have an eye on all the time. You know, and there is something about when you're occupying big spaces, you have to be really tactically astute. Otherwise, you're pretty much, you know, you only got to see sevens rugby on the full size pitch. They've got to be technically and tactically red hot. Otherwise, you're going to get beat, you know, in 1v1. So it's there is a method. There's a lot you can get from tight and bigger areas.
Do you think there's enough, just generally, enough individual work in academy football, for example? So, you know, you've seen a lot of academy football. So my thing is a lot of this, you know, using those, the cliche, those South London ballers, they come in, you know, they're very technical, skillful players, 1v1. And then there's something along the lines of like, oh no, these are just something, like almost the people call them tricks. There's something magic, something from another world, where the reality is like, you know, a lot of players, all players need qualities in 1v1. It looks different for a defender than it does as a wide player, as a fullback, whatever. But I think I don't think there's enough honing down on what the individual tactics, particularly around 1v1 with young players, are. They've either got it or they don't have it, or maybe they develop it rather than saying actually they need it, they have to have it, particularly in the modern game. You look at the centre backs in terms of their qualities on the ball, and even goalkeepers, everybody needs those qualities and those 1v1 elements. What's your thought on that? Do you think there's more capabilities to do more in that area?
I think it's massively important that we focus on the core skills for as long as possible. And if so, for example, there's a trend now to give even 9 and 10 year olds IDPs related to position, and IDPs, you know, individual development programs. But are they centered around core skills, or are they something like, you get to 14 and you ask the question, you know, it's been in academy since 9, is he an excellent receiver and passer? Because that's fundamental to the game. Can he manipulate the ball? Can he strike the ball properly? And can he, can he move that ball? Can he spin it? Can he do what? So you've got to decide what the core skills are, both in and out of possession, but focus on them. And I don't think we do enough of that. I think we jump into lots of other things and the core skills are not honed enough, if you see what I mean. You know, and I've got to be honest, you know, like even Ronaldo, when he was at Manchester United, was fine-tuning his core skills. So it's not something you get when you go, okay, we've done that, we're 12 now, let's move into tactics and teamwork and stuff like that. And you go, yeah, we'll do some of that, but what about keep developing those core skills? So I think that's right. Now, I think you can do 1v1 skills in 2v2s and 3v3s. I think you can coach 1v1, but play in a 2v2 and 3v3. But you've got to have an eye on what that player's doing in the when he's up against his immediate opponent and how he connects with his mate. So in answer to your question, I don't think it's done enough. I don't think it's rigorous. I don't think the detail is there. And I don't think the kids are exposed and assessed in those areas enough.
How do you juggle that then? I mean, I was going to ask you twofold. Firstly, like then, you know, what in particularly in academy football, you know, in you know those high performance environment, how do you balance the technical with the tactical? And what's your thoughts on that in terms of the foundation phase, the YDP? What does that look like? You know, what should the emphasis be?
I think teamwork's really important. I think learning to play in a team is fundamental. But I do say that you can learn to play in a team in 5v5 and 4v4. What we don't do is to, my only thing is to say, if you want to get a scholarship at my club, you have got to be red hot in the core skills. How are we going to get that? And I've got to say, I think we, by going 11v11 too early, we might put people into positions too early, and therefore they specialise too early, both physically, mentally, and technically and tactically. So I think we can be far more fluid with positions on the pitch for longer, And I don't think we need to go 11v11, certainly till under 14. That's my view. I mean, I think we can save 11. And by the way, if you're a 14-year-old and you play injury free, you could be playing 11v11 for over 20 years. So what's the rush, if you see what I mean? And I think we can get far more out of resisting 11v11. And that means our focus. Kids will have more touches of the ball, and our focus is on smaller numbers of kids every time, if you see what I mean.
And what about like grassroots coaches? You know, you get a lot of, you know, if I'm a grassroots coach, I've got an under 10s team, I only get them 1 hour a week, you know, maybe.
Yeah.
What's your advice be for somebody like that in terms of how to, you know, make sure they are still working on those core skills and balancing it with, you know?
I think that they're the hardest jobs. I absolutely total respect for grassroots coaches that have them an hour a week and then probably playing in some sort of league or something on a Saturday or Sunday, but have to play one game a week and then a training session and then a game. And they have to be on the AstroTurf and then get off quickly because somebody else is coming on. They could probably got a small area to train in. The whole grassroots thing is really challenging, but I still think that kids playing, doing the basic skills in 2v2s, 3v3s, it can be 1v1 if needed, and then play a game, that's pretty much your session. But they've got to have that exposure to repeating the core skills over and over again and seeing how they interact with it. Because if you're an under 10 and you're a big lad or a big player, you're going to interact with those core skills differently than if you're a small and wiry and quick and things. So it's learning how you as an individual can use the core skills to be effective in a game. So you've got to keep repeating them. So in grassroots, I think there should be more. And they do a great job, but I think there should be the FA and people who are helping coaches developing there should really help them with small number practices and leading how they dump those skills into the big practice on a Saturday.
And what about older players? Obviously, you've got experience working, you know, in the PDP and with first team players. How much scope do you think is it for guys at the top end or that end to improve? And how much what's the importance of individual work?
Well, if you look now, the clubs and I remember when I was at Palace and I would look out the window and there'd be Ben Watson striking balls after practices. There'd be Andy Johnson, who was a forward, taking out balls and working on his technique over and over again. It never stops. I think there's a real place for continual development until you retire. I don't think there's ever a time when you could say, I've done that. I'm not going to keep fine-tuning what I'm doing. So I think there's a real place for it. But how they fit it into the program would be interesting. But if you see now, if you see 19, 20-year-olds, 21-year-olds, ones that are on loan, sometimes they're going from game to game to game, and it's if they're in quite a tough league, you could be playing Tuesday, Saturday. So you know, you it's either recovery or preparation. So I think it's a challenge, but there should still be an emphasis on continual development of your technical skills. And then that builds the mental side. You know, the more competent you are, you get more confident, you get braver, you get more creative or more reliable, whichever one it is, or both. But I think this time, I don't think there's ever a time when you could say, and they call it this, they call it a white belt mentality, which is you're a black belt, actually, but you think you're a white belt. So you've always got somewhere to go, always looking to improve. And I think coaches can help with that.
What about coaches then? How do you keep developing yourself and, you know, stay on top of the game and you know, making, keeping yourself fresh?
I think it's about forever keeping tracks with the current trends. That's one thing. I think always be prepared to be surprised. I was watching an under 11 tournament and I saw it. I went, oh, I've not seen that. That's interesting. I've not seen that before. Or he's got forever surprised by what kids can do and what players can do. And I think it's always going and reflecting and saying, or thinking to yourself, I'm going to have a go. I think I need to do more of this or less of this. It's forever looking to sort of just have an edge. I don't really know how to put it other than just forever thinking that my best is not quite good enough. I just want to be better. You know, I just want to add this and add that. And also, I think, you know, the skill of the coach is to start noticing things that maybe are less obvious. You know, sometimes you see things and they hit you full in the face. And sometimes when you're looking at talent ID and recruiting people, you look and you go, well, what about that? Did you see him do this over there? You know, looking for the less obvious things. And I think that helps with the coaching, you know, and that comes with experience. Is, you know, you don't, sometimes in coaching, the obvious hits you full in the face, which is fine. But I think the best coaches I've ever met go, did you see that? I'm going, no, I didn't. So, well, you know, so on and so forth. So I think there's building your noticing skills, I think, is really important. Noticing things that may not be so obvious really helps the players, by the way.
Interesting. And what about yourself now? What's your, I mean, now you obviously you're working with the FA. You have ambitions to get back into to academy football, pro football, maybe?
I think player development is my, where I love being on the grass coaching, and I'm moving towards like working with individuals and small groups, you know, more technical sort of like getting them to be doing that and then handing that over to team coaches. I'm really sort of getting attracted by that sort of work and looking at players and saying, well, they need this. When are they going to get it? How are they going to get it? So on and so forth. So I think it's looking at the needs of the individual. I'm really focusing more on the individuals and, you know, some prefer team coaching. I prefer to work with small groups and individuals. I like the team stuff. It's exciting and interesting. But my eyes are drawn to what the individuals are doing, particularly on the pitch, you know, and off it, by the way. Yeah.
What would your advice be to a young, aspiring coach now who's just started his work, you know, starting in the coaching world and wants to push ahead? What's, you know, what are a couple of key things for yourself?
I think it's, one is to take your time. Don't rush into wanting to be an under 18 coach. Get the coaching craft right. So, you know as well as I do, some of the best coaches you've ever seen can coach most age groups. You know, they just have this coaching craft about them. And then I think build your knowledge about the game, definitely about the game, but also about how players function, you know, like what motivates and what drives the individuals. Because in the end, you've got to connect with them. Otherwise, when you're working 1v1s all the time, if you don't connect with them, they're not gonna pick it up and run with it. You know, you have to have these connection skills. My advice is to coach as often as possible in as many varied environments as possible. And be prepared to, you know, like, is if your ambition is to become a first team manager, that's fine. But you've got staging posts to that, you know, like you have to build up to that. I think there is a rush. You know, you get coaches that need to do the B license and then get on an A license, then work in an academy and then da, 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 da. And that's fine. But some of the best coaches I've ever worked with have got a varied experience of environments. I think there might be getting less and less as academies, you know, you can come out of, you can be 21 and it doesn't matter about age, but you can be 21 and then you can be an academy and that's it. You're done. you know, you don't have a variety. So, for example, I've coached, and it's not, you know, it's just interesting. I've coached WSL teams. I've coached England amputee squad, grassroots, school teams, district teams, county teams, 9-year-olds, 29-year-olds, first team players. And I'm not saying that I'm, you know, that makes me the best coach in the world, but I've been fortunate enough to have a variety of environments, and that is invaluable to get that, because you've always got something to fall back on.
Do you have any coaches that you consider like mentors, or who are really big inspirations to you or influences on your coaching?
I think, yeah, all the time. Like John Cartwright, and I don't know if people are familiar with John's work, but it just, like, it fell right into the way I was thinking. And the work you do actually is, you know, like the coaches that work at a very specific niche, yes, and very focused on something. There's a lot of admiration for that. There's Pete Sturgis, who works with, you know, like he's spent his entire life working around younger players. And you get things off, you get a lot off people in different environments, if you see what I mean. So the mentors, I haven't got a mentor as such, but people come and go, and I take things off them as I go along. I'll nick things all the time. I'm like a magpie. Suddenly steal them, you know, and they probably take things off me, not much, I don't think. But then I take a lot off them. So in answer to your question, it's not one in particular. You know, I like the thing, what Emre's doing at Aston Villa. I just think it's fabulous, you know, from a team thing. And then there's coaches that I know working at Luton and Crystal Palace, and I think, cool, I like what you're doing. You know, so I think that's another thing about coach, just be open-minded to pick off of even people that are inexperienced. There's some great work going on, and you can feed off them. You know, they don't have to be experts. You don't have to feed off experts. You can feed off anyone. You know, you've got to just receive it all.
I suppose be a lifelong learner, right?
Ah, that's the term, a lifelong learner. Yeah. Yeah. That's because if you like the game and you just find it interesting, you know, like, then that's what you would do, you know. It's probably obsessive, to be honest.
Paul, on that note, thanks very much, mate. Appreciate it. It's been inspirational.
No problem. It's been great to speak to you. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to the MyPersonalFootballCoach.com Soccer Player Development Podcast. MyPersonalFootballCoach.com's Dynamic Ball Mastery Program is the world's leading online individual technical training program, proven and developed at the highest level in the English Premier League. Sign up now to train like the pros and take your game to the next level. Master the ball, master the game.